might help.
Hi, I'm Helen, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Helen.
John, thank you for asking me to come and share, and congratulations to all the chip takers, and welcome to the newcomers, and happy birthday to the birthday person. I have pictures, so if you pop those around. Just to qualify real quick, I've been abstaining through the grace of God for a little over 10 years and maintaining a 100-pound weight loss. So I'm really grateful for that. Anyway, so since I have so much time, I guess I'll give you the long version. So what it was like, well, you can see my pictures, that's what it was like, but I was always a compulsive overeater from my earliest memory. I just have to say, it's good to be here. Last time I was here, I had just been to Cuba, and that was a really emotional time for me. So anyway, so I just remembered that. But anyway, so back to my story. So I have always been a compulsive overeater, and my earliest memory of compulsive overeating was I was about 4 or 5 years old. Well, I guess five. I was in kindergarten, and I remember living for the. Well, I grew up in the 50s, so you know they gave you a nickel, and then you bought your milk, and then the mother every day a different mother brought a treat, and I remember being completely obsessed with. The treat, what the treat was going to be every day. And the only thing I didn't like that had anything to do with sugar, because I was a total full-on sugar addict from my earliest memory. That's all I wanted to eat was sugar. And so coconut. I didn't like coconut. So I don't know if you remember those Hostess snowballs. And that was the only thing I hated. My sister loved them. I hated those. Anyway, so I remember one day a mother bringing pink, you know, snowballs, and being devastated, you know what I mean? Devastated that I wasn't going to get the treat that day because I hated it, you know? And, like, my day being ruined, you know? And that was at 5 years old. So I don't know how I got that way. The thing I love the most about 12 Steps programs at Overeaters Anonymous is that it didn't matter. Doesn't matter why I did it. I didn't have to figure it out. Because what I did my whole life was spend my life trying to figure it out. And I got here and they said, don't try and figure anything out. Your job is not to figure anything out. So today I don't have to figure anything out, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, but I spent a lot of years in therapy, and you know, because I thought if I just figure it out, then I can stop it. And of course, you know, of course, self-knowledge avails us nothing. And I never did figure out why. I don't know why. My parents were not compulsive overeaters, but my father was an alcoholic, but a very functional alcoholic. My mother stayed home and. She cooked three meals a day and had healthy food in the house, and I wanted nothing to do with it. You know, all I wanted was the sugar. And so my parents were born in Cuba, and so they always had the coffee on the, you know, the cafe, the Cuban coffee on the tables, the you know, thermoses, and the sugar bowl, you know, was always on the table. So I was always eating sugar out of the sugar bowl and, you know, sugar in any form I could get it, you know, and how I could get more than anybody else and more than my sister especially. And, you know, that's all it was, you know, just all about, getting more. And I would eat till I made myself physically ill. Not on purpose, I've never been bulimic, but I would just eat and eat until I would get physically ill. And that happened over and over again. One kind of cookie I remember I got sick on, I don't know how old I was, maybe 7 or 8, and I couldn't eat those cookies again for years. But, you know, I've eaten every other kind of cookie, but that one kind of cookie. Anyway, so, but that was it. I was just, it was just a way, I don't know. Like I said, my parents weren't compulsive overeaters, so it was a real war with them, you know, trying to get me any regular food, and I didn't want to, and I, you know, just, like I said, it was the battle, and they'd threaten me, and they'd say, you're going to become anemic if you don't eat, and they're going to give you a big shot, and, you know, all that every day, and, you know, that didn't matter. Anyway, so it was just how I got through life, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how I got that way. I was just born with that hole in my gut and trying to fill that hole up, you know, and the first thing I tried to fill it up with was food. Later on, I found other things to fill it up with, you know, and still some days I'm looking for other things to fill it up with, you know, and anyway, so that just progressed, you know. They threatened me, though, and, you know, I remember one time we went to my parents' friend's house, and they were Cuban, too, and so they were fixed, and the one thing I hated, too, was I had these weird things that I didn't like, and, my food couldn't be touching, you know, so I had weird little things around the food. And so, you know, they were having black beans and rice, so that's all about the food touching, you know what I mean? And so, and my mother knew I wasn't going to eat, right? So she threatened me, and she said, and the father was a doctor, and she said, if you don't eat, he's going to give you a big shot. And the only thing I was terrified of, well, not the only thing, one of the things was shots. So, and I remember I did, of course, I couldn't eat it because it was, you know, black beans and rice and it was all touching. So, yeah, being terrified, waiting for him any minute to come and give me a shot. But anyway, so it just progressed. Everything was about the food. And like I said, how I was going to get it. When I go to the movies, you know, I remember my mother would give me a certain amount of money as a kid, and I'd scrutinize, you know, everything in the candy counter to see what was going to last me the longest. You know what I mean? And so so I get that, eat it, and then I was ready to go home. I remember thinking, now I got to sit through a whole movie with nothing to eat and just watch the movie. And, you know, thinking, you know, just wanting to go home so I could eat some more, you know. But, yeah, it was just all about the food. So that just progressed, and then as a teenager, you know, I was, you know, just kept eating more and more. I started drinking. I'm also a recovering alcoholic, and so I started drinking at 14, and so then I had that too to help, you know. But I would eat so much, and I was a skinny kid. Because I think, you know, my parents still had a lot of control over how much I ate, and I was tall, so I was growing, and, you know, I think that had something to do with it. And, you know, being an active teenager, I don't know what it was, but I would just binge. I was, like, notorious among my friends how much food I ate. You know, I was just always binging, and they'd say, "Guy, I can't believe how much you eat, and you're so skinny." And I remember, like, the terror when somebody would say that, because I knew even then that I was never going to stop. I would never be able to stop eating that way, you know. And I knew someday I was going to get fat, and I was never going to be able to go on a diet. I knew it, you know. Anyway, so. So, like I said, I just kept, you know, binging. It was really out of control. And I'd, like, go on dates and binge. And I remember one time I went on a date. I went on a date, you know, of course, to the drive-in, of course, lying to my parents all the time, because that's what I did. Because, you know, I wasn't supposed to go to the drive-in. And I remember my boyfriend went and got a pizza, you know, all the stuff you get at the drive-in, right? He got a pizza and, you know, candy and popcorn, and then, of course, had beer, you know. So, you know, that was great. So I remember he went to the snack bar, and he came back and handed me the food, and he said, I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom. And so before he came back from the bathroom, I had eaten the whole pizza. And then all of a sudden I went, you know, he's going to come back and want some pizza. So he came back and he said, where's the pizza? And I said, I ate it. And he goes, no, really, where's the pizza? But, you know, and then I'm sure I proceeded to eat most of the rest of the stuff and most of the beer, you know what I mean? So anyway, that was my idea of a good time. But, you know, that's how I had it. That was how I functioned, you know, because when I ate and then drank, I had that immediate sense of ease and comfort that it talks about in the big book. Because without it, I didn't have that. I felt like a freak. I felt like, and you know, so I can still remember that feeling in my own skin, that total discomfort, that terrible feeling. I felt ugly, stupid, less than, wrong. I just felt wrong. And I don't know why or how it happened. And I remember other girls in school, seeing other girls that were so poised and comfortable in their own skin, and girls that could get up and speak in front of the whole school, forget just the class. And I remember looking at them and thinking, how did they get that? Like, how are they like that? And because I knew how I was, and I couldn't do that stuff in a million years. I just felt wrong. I felt wrong, and I just didn't understand. And so for me, and you know, looking back, I do remember most of those girls, and a lot of them had that contact with God. They did have a connection with God, you know. A lot of them were, you know, active in their churches or whatever, and I didn't have that. And it wasn't that I didn't believe in God, because, well, I was raised Catholic, and I'm not one of those people that are angry at the Catholic Church. I think it's a perfectly good religion, and it helps a lot of people, and I like the nuns, you know, as contrary to most people's experience, I really liked them, and they were very nice to me, and because I could be their pet, because I was such a phony, you know what I mean? On the outside, make it look all sweet and innocent, and then the inside, something else was going on. But I didn't have a personal relationship with God. I didn't feel how God was going to work in my life, you know. So I never had that. I wanted it. I remember wanting it. And I do like what the nuns would tell us to do. I remember around Lent, they'd tell us, like, you know, how to make Lent, like during Lent, really trying to make it a real spiritual experience. And I remember trying, doing what they told me, and I just couldn't feel it. You know, I just didn't have that, any God, really, at all in my life. So for me, God was, you know, the food and the alcohol. So this is very Freudian. My father died when I was 18, and then I married a man 15 years older a year later when I was 19. And so, of course, I didn't want to have to grow up. You know, I thought, okay, I'll marry him, and then I don't have to grow up. You know, he's going to take care of me, and then, you know, I'll live happily ever after, because I really wanted to live happily ever after, you know. But I did, but, you know, I was so sick. And so anyway, and then he thought he was getting some sweet girl, and here I was, you know, alcoholic, living on Valium. I couldn't leave my house without being filled up with Valium and a bottle of Valium in my purse. It was, you know, bad. And then eating, binging. And the kind of the irony is that, you know, and I weighed then less than I weigh now, and I thought I was fat. You know, I was just never going to be right, no matter what I weighed. I wasn't going to be right. I just felt, like I said, wrong. And so he had the greatest aversion of any person I've ever known to any degree of body fat of any human being I've ever known. So who's he end up with, you know? A budding compulsive overeater that hadn't exploded yet, you know what I mean? So we got married, and, you know, I was whining about the weight, you know, I'm fat, and he'd said, like, you know, somebody who would be a normal person, well, if you think you're fat, why don't you go on a diet, you know? Anyway, so I did, so I went on my, well, first I tried, you know, pills and all that, and then I tried that. I don't remember what it is, but it's that pregnant women's urine shots diet, and it was like 1971 or 72, I guess, and back then, and then, so I went on that, and of course, it was expensive, and you only ate 500 calories a day, and then you got these shots. Well, you know, you don't need an expensive shot to lose weight on 500 calories a day. So anyway, so that's what I did, and I lost probably around 20 pounds and kept that weight, and this isn't an exaggeration, for an afternoon. Mm-hmm. I did, because, well, what happened was I got very sick, so I had to go off of it, of course. Eating 500 calories a day. So I got sick, so I had to go off it. And then, of course, the minute I went off of it, I started binging, you know, of course. And then, of course, the insanity is that what we think, you know, I was going to go on a diet, lose the weight, and then I was going to go back to eating how I ate, and the weight was going to stay off. And I really believed that, obviously, you know what I mean? So that's what I did. Then, and then that started the cycle that we all know, you know, that going on the next diet, gaining all the weight plus 10 pounds, and then going on the next diet, you know. So that's what I did. And then when I was about 24, I got pregnant. I gained, like, it was a free-for-all. My girlfriend's pregnant now, and she's gained, what did she say? 24 pounds, and she's 7 months pregnant. And I didn't even go to 9 months. I was only, had delivered 8 months, and I gained 65 pounds. And she weighed 6 pounds, 10 ounces, my daughter. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was just, like I said, a free-for-all. And then that was the only time that my ex-husband didn't give me a bad time about my food, you know what I mean, because I was pregnant. So it was just all-out free-for-all. So, like I said, it just continued on and on. And then finally, I did hear about Overeaters Anonymous in the 70s. I don't remember what year it was, like maybe 78 or something. Maybe before then, I can't recall. But I remember it was a friend of my sister's who was talking about Overeaters Anonymous. And her mother went, and she said it was free. And I remembered thinking, well, then that doesn't work. That's not going to work, because it's free. If something free worked, everybody would be thin, right? Nobody would be fat. There wouldn't be fat people. That was my thinking. So it had to be expensive, otherwise it didn't work. So anyway, finally I did go to OA around 1980, I think it was. And I went. And for 2 years, I didn't eat sugar. And that was the only time in my whole adult life, before 10 years ago when I came, that I didn't eat sugar. And it was the only time that I maintained a weight for 2 years. That was like a miracle. But I did ask somebody to sponsor me, but I didn't really do anything, you know. I think I might have called her for 30 days. And then I never, but I didn't work the steps, you know. I had the big book, but all I remember was reading, War Fever Rang High in a Small New England Town. And I thought, you know, what does that have to do with me? You know, with me and my weight. You know what I mean? I just want to lose the frickin' weight. You know what I mean? And I couldn't see it. It was dead. It was dead to me, the big book. And the miracle is today, every word in that book is like a miracle to me. I mean, it speaks to me. It's so alive. It's so, like, in my heart. You know, it just I love it, but yeah, but boy, back then it was a whole different story, but I just did not get it. So I didn't get it. I wasn't ready. I had more eating to do, but I knew that's where I needed to be, even after I left. And so I went out there, and I, you know, kept going, experimenting, and my life was unmanageable. You know, for the next, let's see, I came back in 97, that was like 17 years. So it was a mess. My life was completely unmanageable. That poor husband of mine tried to help me. We were married 23 years. He tried to help me over and over again. And, you know, he didn't know he couldn't help me. Nobody could help me. And so anyway, finally in 1994, I took my daughter and I left. And so I moved to Long Beach. My daughter and I, she was 18 then, we moved to Long Beach. And one of the first things I did was find out where the OA meetings were in Long Beach, because I knew that's where I needed to be. Well, I thought about going into therapy instead. You know what I mean? Still looking for the soft. For me, that was the softer, easier way, but you know, I was going through a divorce. I was 100 pounds overweight, drinking every day, didn't have a job, and you know, going through a divorce, right? So I didn't really have the money to go to therapy. So I did find out where the OA meetings were, and it was a Friday night meeting there, and I didn't go for about a year, but I knew it was there, you know. I had no life, of course. My life at this point in time was Drake Strawn, remote control in the hand, you know, and my food and alcohol. And that was it. And, you know, somebody came over, I just white-knuckled it till they left. Because I wasn't sharing my stuff with anybody, you know what I mean? And I just didn't, it wasn't a pretty picture. And I could even barely get myself together to leave the house. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't buy new clothes that fit because I was so fat, and I'd wear these stained, you know, giant clothes. And anyway, so that was it. So what happened was, finally, I did go to that meeting, and I went for about 2 years. I think it was on and off. And I asked somebody to sponsor me, but I knew she wouldn't really make me do anything, and I didn't really do it, and I was trying to be abstinent and keep drinking, you know, all that. So then finally, you know what? It was the grace of God. It is totally and completely the grace of God, because I saw this one woman at that Friday night meeting, and she was the only woman in the room losing weight. And so God just gave me, you know, surrendered me to this whole thing. And I just went and asked her to sponsor me. And I was afraid to ask her because I wanted it, but I didn't want it. You know, and that whole thing of wanting it and not wanting it. I remember so many times in therapy and all that, and I'm not, you know, anti-therapy. If it works for you, that's great, and it does work for many things, but it never helped me with my food. But but I remember people would say, because I'd be so desperate, I wanted to lose the weight. I couldn't stand living that way, that eating and being obese, you know, and they'd say, well, you want to stop. You know, and that was not the truth. The truth of the matter was I wanted to stop with all my heart. I couldn't stop. And I couldn't stop because I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm an addict. I could not stop. And so, you know, for anybody who's struggling or newcomers or anybody, just keep coming back, because if you're not here, you know, it's going to be harder to surrender to the program, you know. So I'm just grateful I kept coming back. So anyway, so I asked this woman to please, you know, if she would sponsor me. And she said to me, well, what's your food plan going to be? And I had no idea. So I just said, I don't know. What do you eat? You know? And then she told me to call her at the same time every day, It was, I think, 6:30 at night. And she told me to, you know, get the 12 and 12. I already had the big book. And to start writing, you know. And she told me to, you know, start being of service in the meeting. Start, you know, all that stuff. Folding chairs, you know, putting chairs out, talking to newcomers, seeing where I could help somebody else and get out of my, you know, self-centered head. And so, anyway, and I remember thinking, forget that I was going to be able to call my food in every day. Just calling somebody at the same time every day was like, that's never going to happen, you know what I mean? So, anyway, the miracle is, I did. I called that woman with my food for 7 years. And that was just, like I said, the grace of God. And so I still have pretty much that same simple food plan. You know, things have changed. Like, I became a vegetarian a couple of years ago, but that's not because of OA. That was for other reasons and things like that. So, but pretty much it's the same food plan. And then, but, you know, when I came to, I had all kinds of, you know, I wanted to be thin. I did. I didn't want to be 100 pounds overweight anymore. That's why I walked in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. Hello, because I didn't want to be fat, you know. And so, but there were other things, too, that I have to say that, you know, I had health problems. I, being 100 pounds overweight, my feet hurt. My feet hurt before my feet touched the floor in the morning. Before I got out of bed in the morning, they felt like they were splitting down the middle. I had high blood pressure. They were going to put me on blood pressure medication. And, you know, and that's just the beginning. You know, I'm sure many other things were going on that I wasn't even aware of yet. And so anyway, but it's funny because it's almost like we're not supposed to talk about, in OA, that we don't want to be fat anymore. Like, we're not supposed to say we don't want to be obese anymore. There's something wrong with that. And that's what got me in the door, you know, here. So I'm grateful for that. But I got so much more. What I got when I got here too, not even knowing it, was a plan for living. I had that big book in my house for years, for 17 years, that I never cracked open because, you know, war fever ran high. And I got a plan of living in the big book, in that very book. It was sitting in my bookshelf, a plan of living. And all the answers are in that book. You know, all the answers to everything in my life today is in that book. And, you know, everything in my life that works today is a result of what I've learned in this program, all these principles that I learned in this program, to get out of myself, to not be so selfish and self-centered, you know, and to go do something for somebody else. And one of the first things, the thing that I really learned, the first place I learned to practice these principles outside of these rooms was in the workplace. And so, like, about 2 months after I got abstinent and sober, I got the job. I got a job at the company that I work for now. And my sponsor told me, just go, just show up and shut up, keep your mouth shut, do what they tell you, and see where you can be of service to God and those around you. And so that first year, for the first year I worked in that job, I was in the bathroom all the time praying. I was in there praying because I had to pray my way through the day because I didn't know how to function. You know, I was like, people are being mean to me. Well, they weren't being mean to me. You know what I mean? It was just me. And so I didn't know how to do it, and I just asked God to help me. And that's the other thing, that powerlessness. I'm so grateful. You know, I am so powerless. And I know that today, and that's really being revealed to me, let me tell you, this last couple of weeks. And I've been telling the women I sponsor, you know, just remember you're powerless today. Just tell yourself. And this morning one of them reminded me, and I'm so grateful. She said, I had a great day yesterday. I was just powerless all day long, you know. And she had such a great day. And then it came, I was like, yeah, you know, already I forget. And that's one of the other things is I forget. I forget. And that's why I have to keep coming to these rooms and reading the big book and practicing the steps and reading the 12 and 12 because I forget. I'll forget in 10 minutes after I left here about God. You know, I forget constantly. And so I just, like I said, powerlessness has just been so revealed to me in other areas because the obsession for the food has been removed and you know, the alcohol. But, you know, I find other things, you know, I can start trying to fill myself up with rather than God because, you know, I start thinking I have some power. And I always get into trouble and it always gets painful. And then I remember I am completely powerless and God is so powerful. And I forget over and over how powerful God is. And I've seen it in my life and other people's lives all the time and I still forget. You know, I still forget. So that's why I just have to, you know, keep coming back and doing all this stuff. But anyway, so back in the workplace there, I just had to, I just kept showing up and doing what she said. And I got to learn to stop spinning the planet, you know. And that plans and schemes, you know what I mean? And keep everything spinning. And so, because before I had to do that, I had to manipulate people, places, and things so they think what I wanted them to think, you know, about me. You know, because it was all about me. So I learned to know that they weren't always thinking about me. It wasn't about me. They were thinking about themselves. You know what I mean? And so I learned I could just go to work and do the best job I could do every day. And then I didn't have to do all that stuff. It was such a relief, such a huge relief, you know, like a burden was lifted, you know? But there was this one example I'll just share with you real quick about this program is I worked for the CEO of the company and one of the guys who reported to him was this guy who was, you know, I thought he was really mean to me. And he is kind of arrogant, right? So I just took it all personally. He hates me. I didn't know why he hated me. So he wasn't very nice to me. He was kind of mean and blah, blah, blah. And then I just kept, okay, just keep being of service. You know what I mean? Just don't take it personally. Just keep being of service. So, well, I did this for like 2 years with this guy. Just kept being of service. And one day he sends me this email. And he says, I just want to thank you for just your attitude. You're always, like, so helpful. You're always saying where you can, you know, be helpful. And we've been, like, the best of friends ever since then, you know? But without this program, I never would have gotten there, and especially not 2 years, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have been able to sustain that. So it's just, like I said, the things that work in my life today completely and totally are a result of this program. And, you know, I do have a daughter, and she's 30, almost 31. And she, of course, lives in upstate New York, so I always say, of course, she had to move 3,000 miles away. But the poor kid, you know, she was an only child, and I was drinking and eating through her until she was 20. And so, you know, we don't have a great relationship, but and sometimes it gets better, and then it gets rocky, and then, but my amends to her for the last 10 years has been just to leave her alone, to mind my own business, love her unconditionally. Everything she calls me up and says, I just say, that's great, honey. And she, you know, she got married and then she got divorced, and I just said, well, honey, you know what, that's great. Whatever you have to do, I'm here for you, you know. And I couldn't have done that before because I loved her husband, you know what I mean? I would have been like, but because when I left my husband, my mother loved him, and it wasn't pretty. She was very angry at me for leaving him. But so I just knew, you know, I just thought, you know what, I don't have to live with him, you know. And so, but now what I do now is I call her once a week, and I just talk to her for 5 minutes. And then at 5 minutes, I look at the clock. Like this morning, I was driving. I got on the phone at 10:13, and then I saw 10:18, and I said, okay, honey, well, have a good day, you know, because I figure keep it short. And so that's my new, you know, thing with her. It's just tell her I love her, and but, you know, because, like I said, it wasn't pretty, it was bad, and she's still angry at me, and, you know, and I just know that it's in God's hands. All I'm doing is keeping my side of the street clean, loving her, and sometimes it gets painful, and I get mad, and I just want to tell her off, you know, and I just don't do it, and sometimes it's really hard not to do it, but so, you know, I know God's going to fix it or not, and like I said, I know how powerful God is all powerful, and you know, it's funny, because recently I just was reading something about these young girls, teenage girls that have, this one girl had such a connection with God, and she said she just sees how God supports her every day in her life, and I just think, can you imagine that at 17, having that kind of a spiritual connection? But anyway, so I just think sometimes, you know, how different it would have been, and so, but I'm grateful because I do have that today. I do have that spiritual connection, but like I said, I forget. I'll walk out of here in 15 minutes, I'll forget, you know, until something happens, and then it's, oh yeah, it's in God's hands. So, so anyway, I think I'm almost done here, but like I said, I'm grateful, and my life today is I'm doing the same things I did, you know, 10 years ago when I got here, which is I go to meetings, I'm of service, I sponsor people, I try and stay out of myself as much as humanly possible, because I remember after a couple years thinking, when I first got here, I said to my sponsor, oh no, I'm not self-centered, I put everybody else first, that's my problem. And she said, oh, more will be revealed. And it sure was. And then after, I really thought that too, that I'm not selfish, you know. How can you say that? And I'm completely and utterly selfish and self-centered. And, you know, and it's every day I'm dealing with that. And I remember after a couple years thinking, I think it's getting worse, because I never used to be this selfish and self-centered. Well, of course I was. I was just shoving food down my throat. I didn't know it, but I was, absolutely. Anyway, so, but what I do is, you know, I sponsor women, and I love sponsoring women, especially newcomers, and I have some newcomers now that are so willing, and it's so great, you know, it's so great, I love it. And anyway, so that's all, you know, I do start wanting other things, and then I just get directed back to the program, and I see, you know, this is where I'm supposed to be doing today, because if those other things were supposed to be in my life, guess what, they'd be in my life, you know, because God's all-powerful, and those things would be in my life. So, anyway, so I think my time is up, and thanks for letting me share.